Ever wish you had like a real-time health report card for the air, for the air you breathe,
Route.
like a grade or something?
Yeah, well, the World Air Quality Index data set is pretty close.
Oh,
It
interesting.
covers something like 380 major cities all across the globe.
Wow, 380.
Yeah, and it updates 3 times a day.
Seriously?
Yeah, can you believe they've been doing this since 2015?
That is a lot of
It's
data.
a mountain of data.
So each city gets its own score, right?
Exactly, and each city's score is actually an average of readings from multiple monitoring stations.
So you're getting a really good overall picture of what the air quality is like.
Exactly.
And today we're going to take a deep dive into this data and see what it can tell us about air quality around the world.
Absolutely.
We've got some pretty cool sources for this one, research papers, code snippets, all sorts of interesting stuff.
Oh, yeah, the works.
We're going to explore those tiny but troublesome particles, PM2.5. I feel like everyone's talking about those.
Yeah, everyone's heard of PM2.5.
Right, but do they really know what they are?
Right, exactly. And we'll also be unpacking how scientists use this data to create a feels-like temperature.
It feels like temperature.
Yeah, have you ever heard of that?
Oh, like the heat index.
Exactly. But this one takes humidity into account. It's called the Temperature Humidity Index, or THI.
So it's like how hot it actually feels.
Exactly. You know, a hot day can feel so much worse when it's really humid.
Oh, tell me about it. I can already feel myself sweating just thinking about it. But how do researchers even begin to make sense of all this data?
That's where R programming comes in. They use R to process all that data and create visualization so we can actually see what the data represents.
Visualization, so those cool graphs and charts we always see.
Exactly, and to uncover hidden patterns that we might miss otherwise.
So it's kind of like R programming is their secret weapon.
Exactly. Think of R as a toolkit with all these different functions,
Okay.
each designed to handle a specific part of the analysis.
So like R is like a Swiss Army knife for data.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
I like that. But let's get back to the data itself.
Sure, yeah.
I know they're measuring a whole bunch of pollutants, right? Not just PM2.5.
You're right, it's not just PM2.5. There's six key pollutants:
Okay.
PM2.5, PM10, nitrogen dioxide, ozone, sulfur dioxide, 80 carbon monoxide.
Wow, that's a lot.
And then they also look at things like temperature and humidity, you know, just to get the full picture.
So they're really covering all the bases.
Yeah, very thorough.
But I'm particularly interested in this THI thing.
Yeah, the feels like temperature.
Right, it sounds like something we should all be paying attention to, especially as we think about climate change and, those increasingly hotter summers.
Absolutely. You see, the THI provides a much more accurate representation of how weather conditions actually impact us.
I see.
High humidity, for instance, can make a hot day feel so much worse.
Right.
It can really increase the risk of things like heat stroke and other heat-related illnesses.
That makes a lot of sense. So, is this analysis looking at air quality and THI globally, or are they focusing on a specific region?
So for this deep dive, the researchers actually narrowed their focus to the European Union.
The EU, a
Yeah,
world.
the data set covers, 380 cities worldwide, but they wanted to kind of zero in on the EU specifically.
Okay, interesting choice. So, what kind of insights did they uncover by zooming in on the EU?
Well, they found that 13 countries had the most cities represented in the data. Austria was the leader with 32 cities,
32 cities,
followed
wow.
by Germany with 28 and Italy with 27.
It's interesting to see which countries are really prioritizing this kind of air quality
It
monitoring.
is interesting.
What about the countries that aren't included?
Well, the sources mentioned that six EU countries were missing from the data entirely.
Six countries. Wow, which ones?
Bulgaria, Croatia, Cyprus, Ireland, Latvia, and Malta.
It makes you wonder why their data isn't included.
It's a good question.
It kind of highlights that even with all this open data, there are still gaps and inconsistencies.
Absolutely. Data availability can vary from country to country.
Makes sense.
But the good news is that there are initiatives like the UN Environment Program. They're pushing for a global air quality platform.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, so things are moving in the right direction.
That's encouraging to hear. So this whole World Air Quality Index data set is part of a bigger movement toward open data, right?
Precisely.
Making information accessible to everyone.
Yeah, the idea is that by making data freely available, we empower individuals to make their own decisions about their health.
Okay.
And we can even hold governments accountable for improving air quality.
So this data is really for everyone.
It is.
Scientists, policymakers, everyday citizens.
Exactly.
That's pretty
It's
cool.
a
It's a real game changer. Knowing the air quality can help you make smarter choices. You know, like, should I exercise outdoors today or should I wear a mask?
Yeah, that's a good point. And researchers can use this data to study long-term trends, right? It's not just about what's happening today. Absolutely. They can track how air quality changes over time.
I see.
They can identify hotspots where pollution is really bad and pinpoint potential sources.
Interesting.
They can track the effectiveness of policies.
So it's like a gold mine of information
Exactly. It is.
for anyone interested in air quality.
Yeah.
Well, before we go too far, I think we need to unpack how this data is actually analyzed.
Okay.
We mentioned R programming, but I'd love to understand how researchers use it. You know, how do they make sense of all these numbers?
Well, one of the first steps is to gather all the data files.
Okay.
And they use a function called URL download.
Earl
It's
download.
a really efficient way to collect data from online sources.
So it's like their digital librarian.
Exactly. Like
Yeah.
fetching books from a library, but for data. And once they have all the data, they have to organize it.
Okay, makes sense.
That's where the data.table library comes in.
Data.table, I remember seeing that one in the sources.
It helps manage those massive data sets.
Right, efficiently.
Yeah, it's like a superpowered spreadsheet. Millions of rows of data, no problem.
Wow, impressive. But data is messy, right?
Oh, it can be.
Like it needs to be cleaned up.
Exactly. It needs to be organized before you can do anything with it. That's where dplyr and titer come in.
Okay.
Think of them as the janitors and organizers of the data world.
Okay, so they get everything nice and neat.
Yeah, they remove unnecessary columns, rename variables, and just make sure everything's tidy.
So those libraries are essential for getting the data ready for analysis,
Absolutely.
like taking a jumbled pile of puzzle pieces and sorting them out by color and shape.
Exactly. And once the data is clean, that's when the real fun begins.
The fun part.
Yeah, uncovering patterns and trends.
Creating visualizations.
Exactly. That's where dplot2 comes in.
ggplot2, the visualization superstar.
That's the one. ggplot2 allows researchers to create those stunning visuals, like scatter plots, bar charts, you know, everything.
He's like an artist's palette, but for data.
I like that.
And speaking of visuals, we talked earlier about that calendar heat map. You know the one showing THI fluctuations in CONUS? That was probably created using ggplot2, right?
It was, and it's a perfect example of how powerful visualizations can be. You know, it's much easier to understand THI when you can actually see it represented visually.
It's like the difference between reading a recipe and watching a cooking show.
Exactly. The visual element just makes everything so much clearer.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground. We've explored this World Air Quality Index data set, learned about R programming, and we've even touched on the fascinating temperature humidity index.
And that's just the beginning.
Exactly. There's so much more to uncover.
There is. Welcome back to our deep dive into air quality data.
Before the break, we were about to explore how researchers actually calculate the temperature humidity
Right,
index
the THI.
using R programming.
Exactly.
I'm really curious to see how they take all that raw data and turn it into this feels-like temperature that we've been talking about.
Well, the code snippet we have uses a pretty clever approach.
Okay.
First, they create something called a pivot table from the main data table.
A pivot table.
It's basically rearranging the data so it's easier to calculate the THI for each day and country.
So instead of temperature and humidity data being scattered all over the place, it's grouped together more neatly.
Exactly. It's like organizing your toolbox so you can find the right tool quickly.
I like that analogy.
And once the data is organized this way, they can apply the THI formula to each row.
Okay, and speaking of the formula, can we revisit that magical equation one more time?
Of
It's a pretty
course.
complex one.
It is, but it's really quite elegant when you break it down.
All right, break it down for me.
So the THI is calculated by multiplying 0.8 by the temperature.
Okay, 0.8 times the temperature.
Then you add the humidity divided by 100, multiply by the temperature, minus 14.4.
Okay, this is where I start to lose track.
And then finally you add 46.4.
Wow, that's a mouthful.
It is. But the good news is that our programming does all the heavy lifting for us.
So we don't have to memorize that formula.
Exactly. R is like a superpowered calculator.
Okay, so once they have all the THI values calculated, what do they do with them?
Oh, they don't just stare at spreadsheets full of numbers.
I was gonna say that seems a bit tedious.
It would be. And this is where those stunning visualizations come into play.
Oh yes, the visualizations.
Remember the calendar heat map we talked about earlier?
The one for CONUS, Lithuania.
That's right. It really brings the data to life.
Tell me more about this heat map.
Well, imagine a calendar where each day is represented by a colored square.
Okay.
And the warmer the color, the higher the THI value for that day.
So you can see at a glance which periods of the year have those really uncomfortable, muggy conditions.
Exactly. It's much more intuitive than trying to decipher rows and columns of numbers.
And I bet it's particularly useful for communicating this data to the public.
Absolutely. Visualizations like this can help people understand the impact of THI on their daily lives.
And make better decisions. Speaking of impacts, we talked earlier about how the analysis focused on EU countries.
Right, with 13 countries having the most cities represented in the data.
And 6 EU countries were missing from the data set entirely.
Right. Bulgaria, Croatia, Cyprus, Ireland, Latvia, and Malta.
It makes you wonder why.
It does highlight the importance of considering data availability when interpreting these findings.
Even within a region like the EU, there can be variations in how data is collected and shared.
Absolutely.
It's a good reminder that we always need to be critical thinkers when looking at data.
Even when it's freely available.
There's always more to the story.
Well said.
So we've talked about the technical details of our programming and all that, but what does this information actually mean for the average person?
Right. Why should we care about THI?
Exactly.
Well, THI isn't just an abstract number.
Right.
It has real-world implications for our health and well-being.
Okay. I'm listening.
On those high THI days when it feels like you're walking through soup, we're more susceptible to heat stroke and other heat-related illnesses.
That makes sense.
And those risks are even greater for vulnerable populations, like the elderly, young children, and people with pre-existing health conditions.
So THI is something we should all be aware of.
Especially as climate change is making these extreme weather events more frequent and intense.
So knowing the THI for your area can help you make better decisions.
Exactly. On those high THI days, it might be wise to exercise indoors, stay hydrated, and seek shade outdoors.
It's all about taking precautions.
Right. And THI can also inform public health policies.
Okay. How so?
Well, cities can use THI forecasts to activate cooling centers, issue heat advisories, and even adjust work schedules.
To minimize exposure to extreme heat.
Exactly. It's all about protecting public health.
This is where data analysis can really make a difference.
Absolutely. By using tools like our programming, we can gain insights that can help us make better decisions and improve our lives.
It's amazing that something as simple as a feels like temperature can have such a big impact.
It really is. It's a testament to the power of data and human ingenuity.
Now, before we move on, I'm curious, are there any limitations to the THI?
That's a great question.
Does it take everything into account?
Well, while THI considers temperature and humidity, it doesn't factor in things like wind speed or solar radiation.
Oh, right. Those things can also affect how the weather feels.
Exactly. And even air pollution levels can play a role.
So THI is a good starting point, but it's not the whole picture.
It's important to consider other factors as well.
So it's all about taking a holistic approach.
I like that.
Well, this has been a fascinating exploration of THI.
It has.
But now I'm curious about the ethical considerations surrounding this data.
Okay.
We've talked about the benefits of open data, but are there any potential downsides?
That's a great question and one we should definitely explore.
Let's do that. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We've been exploring air quality data from PM 2.5 to the temperature humidity index. It's been fascinating.
Yeah, it has.
One thing that has really struck me is the power of open data. This World Air Quality Index being available to everyone is incredible.
I agree. Open data is so important.
It really democratizes access to information.
It does.
It empowers individuals, helps researchers, and holds governments accountable.
It's a win-win.
Imagine if we all had real-time air quality data at our fingertips.
We could make informed decisions about our day.
Yeah, like when to go for a run or if we need a mask.
Exactly. Researchers could use it to identify pollution hotspots.
Track trends, develop solutions.
The possibilities are endless.
It's like giving everyone a superpower.
I love that. It's not just about individuals, though. Open data can drive policy change.
Oh, absolutely. Transparency and accountability can really push governments to prioritize clean air.
It's amazing what making data accessible can do.
It really is. As we wrap up, I want to leave our listeners with a thought-provoking question.
Okay, I like those.
We've seen how this data can reveal patterns and inform action. What if we could take it a step further?
I'm listening.
What if we could use this data to create personalized health recommendations?
Personalized recommendations based on air quality.
Yeah, like imagine getting alerts on your phone telling you to adjust your outdoor plans based on pollution levels.
Oh, that's interesting.
Or like smart homes that optimize ventilation using the data.
That would be incredible. A healthier indoor environment.
It's like a future where data seamlessly helps us make healthier choices.
And it's not as far off as we might think.
With all the advancements in technology, it's really exciting to think about.
It really is.
Data combined with human ingenuity can really transform our lives and our planet.
Absolutely. We're all in this together.
Well, on that note, we conclude our deep dive into air quality and you. We encourage you to check out the sources we talked about.
Keep learning.
Stay curious. And until next time, breathe easy.
Thanks for listening.